Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily for Monday, January 30th, 2023. On today's episode, we're going to discuss the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film editorial director Peter Ceretta. And joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. Happy Monday. How's it going?
I can't believe it's actually the end of January already. It's like this year is flying by. But, you know, it's Monday, Ryan, and you are here, which... we know one of the topics of today's discussion is going to be box office. And, you know, because it's the time that we're living in that all revolves around Avatar: The Way of Water.
It does, but it doesn't. It was a kind of interesting weekend. Like, naturally, Avatar, with no big new releases, topped the box office for the seventh consecutive weekend. James Cameron is the only man who's ever managed to do that. It's the first time it's happened since Avatar came out back in 2009, and the record still belongs to Titanic, which, if you can believe it, topped the box office 15 straight weeks.
How many does the first Avatar have weekends in a row?
Do you know? I have to double check that. I believe it was around 10. But yeah, so, you know what, I can look that up right now. But anyway, so Avatar... The Way of Water took in another $15.7 million. It's now passed $2.11 billion worldwide. It recently passed The Force Awakens to become the fourth highest grossing movie of all time. It will soon pass Titanic. What more can I say? Disney must be thrilled. In looking it over, it looks like, 7 is where the original Avatar stopped, as it, slipped to number 2 in its 8th weekend, losing to Dear John, of all things.
Wow. Okay, so this is likely going to beat Avatar 1 in that respect. It doesn't mean it's going to get to the box office that Avatar 1 did.
It's not going to get... it's not going to catch Avatar, but it could get that record. Yeah, because I'm looking at, well, because we have Knock at the Cabin. We have Knock at the Cabin coming out this upcoming weekend. Oh. So, I could see a world in which that does. I would actually be surprised if that does, because you got to figure Avatar is going to drop. Let's say it drops another 25%, sticks around 12 million or so. I could see Knock at the Cabin do way better than that. So, yeah, it's probably going to top out at 7 weeks, I would guess.
Damn. So it's not going to be Titanic's 15 weekends.
No, I would say it's safe to say that's not going to happen. But, yeah, so, I mean, there's not a lot left to say about Avatar: The Way of Water. Once it passes Titanic, that's probably where it's going to sit. James Cameron will have a nice little highest grossing of all time sandwich with Avengers Endgame in the middle. And, you know, what more can be said?
Yeah, I still want to see Titanic to overtake Avatar: The Way of Water and its re-release this next month, and then Avatar to retake it, because like that's fun.
The big thing I am still looking at, and I guess this is worth talking about, because odds are, you know, these movies will get re-released here and there as the other sequels roll out. And one thing to look at is that the recent re-releases for the original Avatar did really well. And it's important to note that the original Avatar, as it stands, is at $2.899 billion worldwide. Wow. Let's assume through a couple of other re-releases as the other sequels make their way out, if this thing can make another $101 million, it could become the one and only $3 billion grosser in history. So, you know, something to keep an eye on, because you look at how much it made in its re-releases, that is not a number that is out of the question. So, you know, we'll see.
Crazy. Okay. Anything else this weekend at the box office?
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. So let's go over this as quick as I possibly can. Puss in Boots: Last Wish continuing to do very well as the only animated flick out there for families. Another 10.6 million for the number two spot, only dropped 10%. Going to cross 350 million worldwide soon. Should maybe top out at, oh God, I don't know, probably maybe 360, which is great for a $90 million movie, and it's probably done very well on VOD. And then you had A Man Called Otto at number three, made another $6.7 million. It is kind of one of the only adult-focused dramas that's making money. The only thing hampering it is its $50 million budget, but it is doing well. One of the very interesting things that happened this weekend was we had stuff like Pathan, I think is how you say it, which is another IndieWood Bollywood blockbuster that made the original estimates had it at like $5.9 million. But now I'm seeing that with the actuals, it'll be closer to 7 million, and that played on less than 700 screens. If it does get to that 7 million, that means it would be the number three movie of the week, with little to no mainstream advertising. So, you know, maybe you can thank RRR and the emergence of Bollywood cinema for mainstream North America for that. So that was really interesting. You know, then you had other stuff like Left Behind, Rise of the Antichrist, which starred Kevin Sorbo. I'm not here promoting that movie necessarily, but as a Fathom Events release, it made $2.3 million. Then you had the Chinese sci-fi epic The Wandering Earth 2 making $1.35 million. Billie Eilish Live at the O2 with $1.9 million. The main point being that specialty programming and sort of serving underserved audiences brought in a lot more box office this weekend. And overall, this weekend compared to the same weekend last year, it was 100% better at the domestic box office. So this weekend, the movies took in around 70 million total, whereas this weekend last year, it was only around 35 million. So as far as the overall box office health goes, we're in really good shape.
Yeah. Well, a week ago we had the Oscar nominations. Did those nominations bring any boost to the box office?
Funny you should ask, Peter. They certainly did. A couple of studios pounced on the Oscar nominations and re-released some movies that had been out for a little bit. Everything Everywhere All at Once made its way back to 1,400 screens, took in another $1.014 million for A24. That's all gravy, given that movie is definitely already in profits. It's also worth noting that movie's been on VOD for months and available on Blu-ray for months, and people were still willing to come out. We also had The Whale expand, adding another 130 screens, took in another $1 million. Women Talking was the big one, one of the big ones. It jumped 167.3%, took in $1 million. That movie had made right next to nothing before. The Fabelmans jumped 73% to make 760 grand. Living, which stars Bill Nighy, who's been nominated for Best Actor, that expanded into over 600 theaters, made, you know, close to $600,000. Tar had an uptick of almost 140% for $174,000. So you're not seeing like gigantic numbers here, but what you are seeing is that the Oscar nominations absolutely did bring people out to theaters and that it showed an uptick in interest. The nice thing is that we have, you know, 5 or so weeks, about 6 weeks, I think, until the actual Oscars air, which means that, you know, these movies can continue to make a little bit of money for the next 6 weeks. And some of these movies are already available on VOD. So it stands to reason that if they had an uptick at the box office, they almost certainly had an uptick in VOD numbers and stuff as well. So that's good for the studios. That's good for people that want to see original movies. And that bodes well for the Oscars ceremony, potentially bringing in more people to actually watch it, which would be helpful as well. So, you know, overall, that's a really encouraging thing to see.
For sure. I want to shift lanes for a second and talk about Tomb Raider, the TV series at Amazon. We learned a couple days ago that Phoebe Waller-Bridge is set to write and develop a Tomb Raider TV series at Amazon. That's not all we learned, but let me just talk about this for 1 second, because I think this is interesting because, you know, the franchise of Tomb Raider is... it's kind of like a take on Indiana Jones, right? It's kind of like in that same wheelhouse, and she But she's in Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny, which she also helped write, or did she get full screener and credit? I don't even know.
I think she's just in it. I don't think she, because she wrote No Time to Die, but she didn't, or she co-wrote No Time to Die. I think she's just in Indiana Jones.
Okay, then I am totally wrong on the screenwriting credit. Okay. I'm looking this up right now.
But anyway, she's got her hand in a couple of treasure hunting camps.
Oh yeah, I'm totally wrong on the screenwriting. I don't know why I thought that she helped write it. But yeah, James Mangold, Jez Butterworth, and John Henry Butterworth. Either way, she's in Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny. And the point I wanted to get to is a lot of people have been kind of assuming that Indiana Jones, well, there's a couple assumptions going on with this last Indiana Jones. A lot of people seem to think Indiana Jones is going to die in this movie. Time will tell if that's the case. It's kind of been said that this is the last Indiana Jones film for Harrison Ford. He's kind of come out and said that much. I think the prevailing thought is that Phoebe Waller-Bridge's character in Dial of Destiny is going to kind of get past the torch in a way.
There's been an assumption about that. Yeah. Because Kathleen Kennedy, Lucasfilm, Disney's made it very clear that like Harrison Ford is Indiana Jones. We're not recasting that role. It's not happening. Like, so, you know, it's just, they're not going to go that way with it. So if they want to continue the franchise, it's got to be a passing of the torch.
So this is kind of interesting to me, because if Phoebe Waller-Bridge is developing, I mean, I don't think she's starring in this Tomb Raider film.
She's just developing and writing it. I don't think she's set to star yet.
But if she's doing that, doesn't that kind of bring some, I don't know. It makes me curious if the rumors are true that the torch is going to be passed to her, because I feel like, would she really be wanting to do two? Would she really want like her, you know, next decade or two to be tied up in two Tomb Raider
very similar franchises? But I think the thing is, though, you have to look at, she's got a deal at Amazon, I think, to develop other stuff. So she does some acting for sure. The other thing, I don't know that that's the way it's going to go. I've been very hesitant to buy those rumors. I do believe that like Disney was going to keep its options open, where like, okay, she's here. She's probably not going to die. If people respond well to it, we could always make a movie or show with her, but we're not going to like firmly set that up just in case it doesn't go the way we want it to go. So that would be my best guess.
And if she's Williams, we'll forget about her. And never
The other thing I think is there's that Indiana Jones spinoff TV show being developed loosely for Disney Plus.
Ravenwood.
But I do think that, like, you know, given what's gone on with Ke Huy Quan from Everything Everywhere All at Once, it would be way more likely to me to see like a short round show or something at this point.
For sure.
So I don't know. We'll see. But I mean, that show, the other thing to consider is that show is just one part of what apparently is going to be a bigger thing for Amazon right now with Tomb Raider.
Yeah. So that was the initial report, that she was developing that show. But now we have learned that there's a show, there's a movie, they're going to be connected, they're going to tie in directly with a new previously announced game being developed by Crystal Dynamics, and it's going to be like a Marvel-esque multimedia franchise. In other words, a cinematic universe. So
yeah, they were very hesitant to use that phrasing, but because there was a few months ago there, because there was supposed to be a sequel of sorts to the 2018 Tomb Raider that starred Alicia Vikander, and then that fell apart, the rights lapsed, and so there was apparently a bidding war for the Tomb Raider rights, and Amazon's deal was apparently second to only their massive deal for the Lord of the Rings rights. So they apparently paid a pretty penny for these.
Yeah. Do you think Tomb Raider is enough to sustain a, I was going to say cinematic, a Marvel-esque multimedia franchise?
Well, I think the games have endured for decades, so there's no question, people will go to the games if they're good. The movies have been modest hits at best. The original from 2001, $94 million budget, $273 million worldwide. Back in the home video days, that's okay. The sequel, $90 million budget, only $157 worldwide. That's a flop any way you look at it.
I have no doubt that they could have a series of films. Ryan, I guess my doubt or my cynicism is in like a connected narrative that goes, not just in the movies, but the TV show and the game. And you have to watch all three to.
Right. So I think. I think what I was getting at is, OK, so let's look at the most recent one. The 2018 Tomb Raider did almost identical numbers to the original. $90 million budget, $273 million worldwide box office. So I think what you're looking at is like, sure, if you budget the movie correctly, you can make a movie people will watch. I do believe you could sustain a TV show and movies. I think you could. I think the problem is if you start getting into like, oh, you have to buy into this whole interconnected universe and care about these other characters. No, I just think that if you're smart, you can maybe make a show that, sort of releases in the in-between windows of the movies and you can watch either or. If you budget them correctly, I think it's fine. The games are going to do just fine on their own because they're the games. So I think that like if you're investing in like a multimedia franchise, sure. If you're saying we can build a cinematic universe out of this, probably not.
Yeah, I agree with you. We have some more to talk about, but we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Okay, I want to talk about the DCU. Rumor has it that they might announce the DCU's slate sometime this week, maybe even possibly tomorrow.
On that note, James Gunn has been very vocal on Twitter. I've covered this for Superhero Bits quite a bit. He's said they're going to at least announce some of the slate in January. Well, it's January 30th, so if they're going to do that, it's going to be very soon. So seems likely.
Yeah, he only has one day left.
Right.
But we have this quote from Dave Bautista. James Gunn is known for working with the same people over and over again. He's a people person. He loves he makes relationships with these actors, and he loves working with them. And he brings back, and I think he's even talked on Twitter about his DCU will have some of the James Gunn regulars. But we have Dave Bautista, who was asked about this by Insider, I think. Yeah, it was Insider, and he gave some information that I think is a little bit telling. This is what Dave Bautista says: "I have had conversations with James about that, but I think the direction he's leaning in, completely rebooting that whole universe, he's starting from scratch and starting younger and fresher. And I think you need to do that." He went on to say, "I think for the DC universe to be revived, you need to start from scratch. I think you need to start with younger actors. You need to start to plan for the next 15 years. And I just don't think you can do that with me. And I understand that. And I have to say that I appreciate that because I don't want to play a character that I can't bring justice to it. I don't think at this point in my career that I can bring justice to Bane anymore. I just don't think I could handle that the physical part, and I don't think I would have the longevity to plan ahead for films." So I just don't know if I'd be that guy, unquote. So I think this is a little bit telling. I mean, it's not like hugely surprising, but him saying that James is starting over from scratch, I think we assumed. Younger and fresher, I think, is something that we hadn't heard.
Well, but it's sort of, because, I mean, James Gunn already said when it came to light that he was writing a new Superman movie that it was going to be a younger Superman, which is part of the reason that Henry Cavill won't be taking the role again. So I think we've already had hints that that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. I just think it's strange that Dave Bautista is too old to play Bane, because I always assumed Bane was going to be like in his 40s or... And I just looked it up. Dave Bautista's 54 years old. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
That.
So he's even joked about, like, you know, Drax being difficult because it's harder for him to take a shirt off. I mean, like, Dave Bautista is in incredible shape, but, you know, you can only sustain that sort of physique for so long. And, you know, yeah, I think that, like, being 54 and Bane is a very physical role. Like, and also, I just think Dave Bautista's doing different stuff, like what he's doing with Knock at the Cabin, even. Like, he just wants to do different things with his career at this point. So I think that's fair.
Yeah. I think there's also an element of that going on here, that like maybe Dave Bautista wants to do some other stuff other than superhero movies.
Right. Because everyone wants to work with him. Like you know what I mean? Like you look at the list of directors that dude has worked with, like ever since starring in Guardians of the Galaxy. It's awesome. And also it's because like, he's a very good actor, you know, like he's, you know, Rian Johnson, Denis Villeneuve, M. Night Shyamalan. I mean, you start going down the list, you're like, damn, people want to work with this guy. And so, like, you know, Sam Mendes even, because he did Spectre. Like, you know, so I feel like he's going to have a lot of opportunity in front of him. And, you know, if you're in, even if he did, let's say he got offered Bane, at this point you have to take into consideration what that means for your career and what you're giving up to play a role like that at this point.
Yeah, and I've also heard that he's just a delight to work with. Like, I have not heard anybody say one bad thing about working with Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
He's someone you want to have on set. I remember being on the set of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and being in line at the craft service table, which, by the way, the stars do not wait in line at the craft service table. They usually have someone go get them craft service and bring it back to their trailer. But Dave Bautista was in line in front of us, and then, like, he looked behind us. He was like, oh, no, get in front of me. You guys... No, he was just being like super nice. So he's a great guy.
I've heard nothing but like, because there was a video after Glass Onion came out of him on his last day of filming, and he gave this little speech on set about how like every one of you worked harder than me. I don't like doing this. Like, I'm just here to work like you guys. And I shared that, and then I had some people that like have a little bit more intimate knowledge behind the scenes, and they say, yeah, like he's one of those guys that like he presents that, but like, he really is that way. Like, no one has a bad thing to say about him like that has ever worked with him, apparently. So, yeah, I mean, you know, so that reputation and his ability to, you know, do different types of roles. I mean, he, again, the opportunity in front of him is going to be greater than I think at this point signing up for another decade of superhero movies is going to warrant.
For sure. Okay, let's move on to our last story for today. And that is something you posted about last week. This is about Peacock and how much money they made last year. Or should I say how much money they lost last year?
Yeah. Ryan, tell us about just real quick before we move on. I just did look something up while we were talking. And so Knock at the Cabin currently at the low end is expected to debut with $18 million. So it will almost certainly dethrone Avatar, just to sort of put a pin in that. But so good for Dave Bautista. But anyway,
yeah
circling back to Peacock. NBC, Comcast recently reported its fourth quarter earnings for 2022. Comcast owns NBC Universal, which is the driving source behind Peacock, the streaming service where you can watch such shows as Girls 5 Eva and Rian Johnson's new show, Poker Face. Well, as we know, we've talked about a bit here that starting a streaming service is tremendously expensive. You have to invest a lot of money over time to build up a library that is attractive enough to get subscribers. You know, even Disney is sort of not looking to profit on Disney Plus till 2024. That's fine. But they also, you know, Disney across Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus has over 235 million subscribers. Well, Peacock is sitting at 20 million. and they're quite frankly lagging behind most of the big competition. And the losses are piling up. For 2022, Peacock lost $2.5 billion, and those losses are expected to peak in 2023 with another $3 billion in losses. All of this while they have about a tenth of the subscribers of Netflix or Disney. That math is pretty unfavorable. You know, when you consider that Peacock costs anywhere between $4.99 and $9.99 a month, but that is not taking into account that a lot of those are deals through other, you know, cable, cell phone, whatever. They make those deals where you get it much cheaper. There's annual plans, you know, all that stuff. Plus they have a free version, which, you know, prevents a lot of people from subscribing. And even if you were to get that $9.99 a month from everybody they currently have, that only gets you to about $2.4 billion per year in revenue for get profit. And they're nowhere near $9.99 a month per subscriber. And that's where they're still losing $2.5 to $3 billion a year. So how many subscribers does it take to get you into the black? I mean, you know, they seem to be playing a losing game here. And I don't know at what point. You know, I understand that, you know, like companies like Amazon, Netflix, these large, large media companies, they tend to operate at a loss, but this just seems wildly unsustainable to me. You know, so, you know, I don't know, but read the tea leaves. It doesn't seem like Peacock's going to be the one to make it.
Yeah, I love your headline is like, how is this sustainable? And I think your conclusion is it isn't.
Well, I'm just asking a question because, like, again, I'm not a business guy. Like, you know, box office is the thing I like about this stuff is numbers don't really lie to you, right? And
yeah,
I'm just saying that the math is unfavorable because I think the problem is that the ultimate conclusion I come to is that, okay, so Comcast, NBC Universal in particular, is in a bad spot because, you know, they're a cable company ultimately, and they've relied a lot on like traditional over the top TV, cable, satellite, that sort of stuff. Well, that stuff's all dying on the vine. Cord cutting is accelerating. DirecTV just lost the NFL Sunday ticket rights. And as a result, they cut like 15 or 20% of their staff or something, you know? So like these companies have to have an eye on the future. So they must have an eye on streaming. And so I understand the need to continue to invest in Peacock. But the problem is their shows and movies aren't breaking through in the way that like Netflix, HBO Max, Disney Plus, they're getting hits. And so it's like, you know, what do you do? And do you want to get into speculation territory at all, or should I just leave it at that?
No, let's get into speculation territory. And I also, before we actually get into speculation territory, I wanted to ask you about the freemium aspect of Peacock, because we see other streaming services going into that area where they're going to be, you know, offering their services with ads for either free or for a lower price. And that's something that Peacock has kind of done from the beginning. They've been that whole freemium model. And I always thought that that was a bad model for streaming services. I feel like, you know, if you have a premium product, you need to get people to pay for it.
Yeah, I think the thing with Peacock is it's heavily restricted. The free one is, because I signed up for Peacock like day one just to check it out. And I really like that they have like one of the things I really like about Peacock is they have like a Pluto TV element to it where there's just a bunch of live streaming channels you can go to. So if you just want to turn your brain off and turn something on, you know, so you can access that stuff for free.
Yeah.
But like, you know, most of their premium shows, most of the premium movies, they're not available on free. So you'll be like looking around and you might want to watch something. Well, then you got to sign up. I don't know what the conversion rate is there, but I think Peacock in the beginning was sort of like trying to set themselves apart from the pack. And I sort of understand the thinking there. It just didn't really pan out, you know.
Oh, okay, let's get into the speculation realm. What do you think is going to happen?
Okay, look. I think the point at this point in the streaming wars, particularly after what happened in 2022, just to summarize very quickly, Netflix lost a tremendous amount of value. Pretty much every major media company saw their stock drop a pretty significant amount last year because, you know, this whole spend anything at all costs to win at streaming strategy is no longer being favored by Wall Street. So, you know, you had HBO Max, you know, shredding content like crazy as a result of what's going on with Warner Brothers Discovery. I'm sorry. So basically the point is that like the streaming wars are coming to a head. We're going to start seeing in the next year or two, who's going to win out, who's going to not. not all of these services are going to make it, plain and simple. Peacock is firmly in the middle, if not lower middle of the pack. So what happens? Maybe we get another big merger on the table. Netflix has lost a lot of value. Netflix kind of stands alone. They don't have other elements of the media business. I could see a scenario by which Comcast buys Netflix and folds Peacock into Netflix, and then Netflix is the streaming arm of Comcast. And then Netflix isn't just relying purely on streaming. They have, it is one element of a much larger media business, but Netflix is the biggest name in streaming, so it would add tremendous value to Comcast, and it would add tremendous safety net to Netflix's overall business model.
If you had asked me 2 years ago if that was possible, I would have laughed at you, Ryan.
Right. But a lot has changed. 2022 changed everything. But then you also have to look at Apple has Apple TV Plus. Apple TV Plus is almost cute at this point. They have a lot of good shows and movies, but their library is tiny. They need a library acquisition if they want to keep at it for real. And, you know, I could see Apple maybe buying Comcast. I don't know. Like, that's a big, or spin-off NBC Universal from Comcast, sort of like how AT&T did with Warner Media, and maybe Apple makes a big purchase there. But I could, because Peacock can't make it with these numbers, so something crazy has to happen, and that would be the something crazy would be my
guess. And and you mentioned that, like, NBC Universal is a, you know, this big company that has all other divisions. My other love other than film is theme parks. Do you know how much NBC Universal made in 2022 with theme parks?
I have no idea.
$2.1 billion. So they basically subsidized the loss of that Peacock made with their theme parks, which is actually kind of amazing because 10 years ago, Universal, I think every year was like $500 million. So they've quadrupled that number in a decade. So
that's amazing. And as we discussed after I got back from my vacation, I am an enormous fan of Universal theme parks now. But could you imagine, let's say NBC Universal or Comcast buys Netflix, all of the Netflix stuff that you can exploit for the theme parks, you know, that becomes, you know, bigger business all around. So, you know, you can see where it would make sense.
Oh, it would totally make sense. And I feel like, yes, Netflix is not making the money that, you know, but I feel like there's components to that that could be good for an acquisition other than just being like, you know, becoming one of the top streaming services, like the merchandising, the licensing, the, you know, being able to make a Stranger Things theme park ride or.
Well, right. And even like a physical media business, even though that's a very small fraction of the overall business at this point, you could maybe see where Universal and its divisions go, okay, look, we're missing out on some home video markets. Screw it. Let's put that out there, you know, or like, or, you know, or the, again, the idea that, you know, the one thing I think Netflix is resisting right now is going harder on theatrical. Well, I'll bet you anything, if, you know, Comcast bought them, they would exploit some of Netflix's bigger releases for Universal Pictures. And, you know, so Netflix could in turn boost Universal's box office, and then those hits benefit Netflix more. Like, it makes a lot of sense.
It definitely does. Well, we'll see what happens in the coming years, or maybe even this year, because you said they're expected to lose $3 billion this year.
But that's where the losses are expected to peak, Peter, which is the good news. So, you know.
Is that good news? I don't know if that's good news, Ryan.
Not if you're sitting under 100 million subscribers, it isn't.
Okay. You can find more of all the stories we mentioned on today's show on slashfilm.com and linked in the show notes. You can find this podcast, Slash Film Daily, on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please send us your feedback, questions, comments, concerns to us at peter@slashfilm.com and rate and review this podcast and Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, spread the word, and we'll see you tomorrow. Maybe we'll be talking about the DCU lineup. That'd be exciting.
It would be exciting.
Yeah. See you then.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.